Blog Talk Radio.
What up, people? This is Speak It Like You Think It Radio. I'm your host, Naj. You can catch us at Speak It Sports on Twitter. I am joined tonight by my co-host, at Barzy on Twitter, the one and only Craig Barzy, professor of all things sports. Barzy, how you doing, sir? It appears the difficulties are technical. May not be able to get Barzy. While Barzy is working on the board, trying to get this connected, I guess we're going to have to keep rolling and see what we can do. If you don't know me from before, talking sports, I like to explore sports in a real way. That's what we do over here. We try to explore sports from the perspective of not only a fan, but a fan with a little experience. So, you know, won't hear a lot of hot takes. Won't be a lot of takedowns unless you've earned it. Won't be a lot of good guy, bad guy stuff. Oh, yeah, you know I'm here, man.
All right.
You're going to get our perspective in a real way. We're connected, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right, all right. Like I said, the difficulties are technical, but we'll get it together. Once again, this is Speak It Like You Think It Radio. I'm your host, Naj, joined by the co-host, the one and only professor of all things sports, Craig Barzy. Barzy, how you doing?
All right, man. Happy to be back.
Yeah, man. It's been a long time. Something about like a two-year hiatus of us always doing shows. Backed away for a minute, but, you know, now we're back. So hopefully we can get some controversy started tonight. We can get some interesting topics started tonight. And, you know, just have a good time with sports. You'll be hearing from a lot of people who we've either worked with in the past or, you know, we've worked with in the present with real good sports opinions. So we're really going to get it. But first topic, Barzy. Look. I'm a LeBron James fan, man. Like, I respect LeBron for his talent, for what he does, and for what he is. You know what I mean? As a good, positive dude. But, man, LeBron the GM, Barzy. I'm just throwing this out there. Like, Barzy, LeBron the GM, can you name something to where you said LeBron really did a good job with that power move in the front office?
Trying to think. Maybe the last great thing he did was get Blatt fired, man. Maybe that's the last good GM move that he did, man. Maybe getting rid of Blatt, the head coach. But if you're talking from a player standpoint, recruiting, that's tough, man. I'm not sure as far as on the court player. LeBron, the GM, I'm not sure what you could say is would have been something great or a player he's recruited that has been great, you know, to the Cavaliers, man.
Well, he struck out on Joe Johnson last night, so that's the most recent thing. But let's go back to the past. Let's talk about his first stint in Cleveland, where he was basically, you know, pushing Danny Ferry around for certain moves, him and Dan Gilbert, because, you know, he was that star and he wanted certain moves made. But the choices, the re-signing of Big Z, the re-signing of Larry Hughes as your top free agent, re-signing of Donyell Marshall, and then one season you bring in Antoine Jameson as the so-called big gun to put you over the hump. Antoine Jameson.
Not a good resume, man. It's not a very good resume.
Now we can take it a little further. Let's say his homie, who I got to look at this bad NBA move, but if this is your friend, you got to shout out LeBron if this is your friend. James Jones, the fact that he's gotten that dude checks upon checks upon checks somehow.
Mike Miller.
James Jones should have been out of the league years ago. But Mike Miller. Miller has that one finals game to where LeBron can kind of say it paid off. He has that one finals game where they clinched against the Thunder, where I think he hit like 8 threes or something crazy. He can give him that. And then the last move, the move that I think really, really puts it on LeBron as far as how this Cleveland Cavaliers second tenure turns out. When he forced the trade of Andrew Wiggins off of the team for Kevin Love, without seeing enough of Andrew Wiggins. Because I think if he's making a true assessment now, he really rethinks that. What do you say?
I think most definitely, especially after how you saw Tristan Thompson kind of pan out over the course of last year. It kind of made, Love seem like a luxury. And if you really would look at it, especially how Wiggins developed over the course of the year, he could have been an extra wing piece, and they would have had him during the finals. As opposed to Love, he would have played. He could have been instrumental in helping. And that may have. I'm not sure it would have changed the series much, but that wing player, that extra wing player, that extra wing defender, that extra guy who's able to play off of LeBron. That could have been, you know, somebody who could hit shots, flash to the basket. It could have been instrumental in maybe stealing
and
another
young
game.
Young legs, the thing you always got to add. Because you always need young legs in the NBA. The season is tenuous. Guys get worn out. Guys get beat up. And when you got those young legs on your team, man, it really helps. You don't want too much young. You don't want to go Philly now. You don't want anything like that. But you do want a little bit of youth on that squad. To where you're not dependent on old guys who can barely get down in that stand. But, yeah, LeBron the GM, man, everything in Cleveland is going to be on his head for this last section of his career. I don't think he can leave Cleveland, considering he's left once. I think he's got to make his stand here, and he's got to get that roster right in order to really be able to compete with the Golden State Warriors and OKC and the Spurs on their last, like all of these different real contenders within the game. LeBron has to get that roster right because the failure will be his if he leaves Cleveland without a ring and retires.
Yep, you're exactly right. I mean, it is, you know, as the commercial says, he's got to get one for the land. That's his whole purpose for going back to Cleveland, you know, regardless whether I thought it was a mistake or not. You know, that's what he chose to do. And in the end, you know, his success as far as bringing the championship there will be looked upon whether he really made the right decision. Because you look at how that Miami roster kind of, you know, developed. You got Hassan Whiteside. I mean, if you think about it, really, man, you know, without maybe the Dragic, trade, if you put LeBron back on that team, are they that much is Cleveland that much better? I mean, you put LeBron on that team, Miami team right now, they might be able to do some work. You know, I'm saying minus that Dragic, because I don't think LeBron on that team, they might have been able to re-up Dragic and pay him that, you know, that amount of money. But
right,
you know, Hassan Whiteside would have been there. There would have been other people
with the Chris Bosh health scare. Like right now, if you get Chris Bosh down with the health scare, if LeBron's there, you're still actually in contention with the other pieces around. Mind you, difficult to do once you do the signing. But look, like I said, LeBron as a GM, man, is still up in the air. You got to say that the grade is incomplete. Whole lot of misses, a few a few hits, and we'll see what it does going forward. But the person who did come through as a GM, the franchise who did come through and go after Joe Johnson and get him, we're talking about, once again, the one and only Patrick James Riley. Pat Riley, for those who don't know him personally. He pulled it off, dude. How did he pull this off to where Joe's made a boatload of money? You think the only thing on his mind is a ring. How does he end up in Miami, which is probably not a championship contender? I don't think we would look at Miami as a championship contender. How did Riley pull this off, in your opinion?
Man, I don't know. Riley's always worked magic, man. It's kind of hard to say, man. He's able to, get with these guys and state a vision, a plan, and, you know, guys buy in, man. Guys want to be a part of it. I think, you know, his track record speaks for itself. Hey, man, I think we got some guys joining in here.
Okay, hold on those guys, because we still got a scheduled call in at 8:45. One of the great voices in sports, friend of the show. I'm going to hear from Gordon Robinson shortly. I got to say, though, man, Pat Riley back in the 90s was getting like 50 grand a speech when he would go to these corporate events. That dude has the power of persuasion. He has the power of just exuding confidence. And, you know, that plays well with people, man. So, I mean, shout out to Pat Riley, man. He pulled it off. I thought Joe should have gone to, as the man Royce King said last night, I thought he should have gone to San Antonio, then Cleveland, then maybe OKC as the top choices. And he knocked all those off the board and went to Miami because Pat Riley gets it done. There's no other way to say it, man. But, if you got Gordon on the line, definitely bring Gordon in. But before we get to that, we're going to stick to the script over here. And, Barzy, look, man, I know, like, look, you're a Doc Rivers guy. I'm a Doc Rivers guy. We both respect him. Respectfully, we respect Doc Rivers as a head coach. As a GM, that's a whole other story. But Doc Rivers comes out with this statement that says NBA coaches should have a challenge flag similar to the NFL to try to dispute calls.
Oh, man. That never worked. It'll never work in the NBA, man. I mean, it, to even bring up that concept seems ridiculous to me, man. Challenge flag, what? In the middle of a fast break, in the middle of someone's jump shot? I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe he's throwing stuff out there, you know, just for conversation sake, but it wouldn't make much sense in the NBA, man. Not from my perspective. I don't see it making much sense.
Yeah, I don't get that one either, and I'll just go to somebody on Twitter. Wish I could credit you. Please throw shots at me on Twitter if you feel like I stole this tweet and didn't give you your credit because I can't remember your name right now. But dude said, man, look, I thought Doc Rivers thought he could eat timeouts. I thought he was feeding his family with timeouts the way he holds on to those things. And he's the one to bring up a flag? You know what I mean? Like a flag? Like, dude, you don't even use your TOs. Work with what you got right now, then figure that out. You know what I mean? Don't be really trying to bring new stuff to the table when you over here not doing what you already – using what you already got. But, yeah, man, if you got the Gordon on, man, please bring Gordon through, man. We're ready to speak to the man.
Gordon's is that Gordon 678-492?
Whoa. Don't put that man's number out there like that on the internet.
Nah, I just said I just said the first six.
Yeah, that's Gordon.
No.
That's not G. Okay.
Wow, you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that Gordon Robinson right there?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, now look, y'all got to understand, this is the first show. There's going to be some technical difficulties, but we're going to get it together. Right now we're speaking to the one and only Gordon Robinson. You can find him on Twitter at GRobinsonSports. Check out his blog on 929thegame.com/CBS Atlanta. Always coming with some really good points and some interesting ideas. Gordon, you know I want to talk NBA playoffs with you, my man. What are we looking at in the East? Let's stick with the East first, since that's where the Hawks are.
I mean, we all know who's the champion of the East. You know, Cleveland got it right now. I don't see anybody that can contend with them. We'll see. I mean, is Toronto? Does anybody really think Toronto's a real threat at number two? And outside of that, shoot, everybody else is just falling in line. I mean, Boston's number three. Does Boston? Anybody think Boston's a real threat to make a run in the East in playoffs?
Nah, man.
I mean,
I like Boston and what they're doing towards the future, but looking at them right now as a real threat, I can't see it. But I do like Detroit on the rise, and I think Detroit is a scary first round opponent if they're able to get that 7 or 8 seed.
Well, right now it's so close that, like you said, they could possibly move up to as close as fifth. With a couple, put a string of couple games together, but that's the thing that's going to happen right now, man. The way the East is shaping out, you have to hope for favorable matchups. You know, a team, and if you're a team like the Hawks, like the Raptors, and especially Miami, what you'll have to hope for is that a team like Detroit comes along and is able to stretch Cleveland out to like 7 games. You know what I'm saying? So and then bruise them around, so that when you get to them, whenever you meet them, you'll have a better shot. Because as we've seen last year, Cleveland they have the injury bug a lot. So whether it's Kevin Love, whether it's Kyrie Irving, you know they have a possibility of being injured. So the matchups are going to be the big thing to look for in the East.
And within that with those matchups, Gordon, do you see possibly Charlotte probably falling out and maybe Washington replacing them? And then besides that, we just got what we have right now. It'll just be a shuffling of seeding.
Well, right now, if Charlotte falls out, Detroit is right there. I think they're both tied. I think Detroit has 2 more losses, I think, than Charlotte does. But if Charlotte falls out, Detroit is right there with them. For me, I said this since the beginning of the season, with the fact that when Washington lost Paul Pierce, they lost a lot of their heart. And I think that's what we're seeing. Everybody expected Washington Wizards to be in the top three in the East. And now they're not. I think most of that you can contribute a lot of that to the fact that Paul Pierce isn't around in that locker room to bring that fight into the locker room. Because we all saw what he did last year in the playoffs, you know, especially with the infamous I Call game, you know, against the Hawks. So, I mean, and even with that, look what he did when he got with the Clippers and they would put everybody to win. LeBron, he told him to take that junk off. We don't wear that. We don't wear LeBrons around here. We don't do none of that. So he brings that element. So, without having that element, man, I don't put much faith in the Wizards.
Down on the Wizards. So, yeah, man, that East is going to be tough because, like you said, it's mostly about seeding. But let's move out to the West, which is always more interesting, but now this is not what it used to be, to where the West was so far above the East. I mean, you look at the West, you got some teams hovering around 500 who are looking like they're going to get in. But no matter what, we got to talk Golden State first. Gordon, are you watching this, man? Is this the best ticket in sports right now? Golden State Warriors.
It appears so, man. I mean, I don't want to, and I've been on podcasts and on different blogs saying, I'm on the record basically saying that I don't think they'll make that 72, simply because I think you'll have to prioritize what you want to do this season. Do you want to go for a great regular season, or do you want to prepare yourself for a back-to-back championship run? And if you want to go for a regular season record, then by all means keep playing Steph, because we know Steph he's injury prone as well, even though it hasn't shown his head in the past year and a half. But he likes that ankle injury will pop up on stuff. So at a certain point in time when you're up, would you elect to rest your guys, or are you going to keep putting them out there? You're going to keep putting Clay out there. You're going to keep putting stuff out there to try to get this 72-10 record, or to try to beat the 72-10 record. At some point in time, you have to dial it back and realize, okay, either I'm going to make this a great regular season stretch, or I'm going to prepare my team for a playoff push that we can get back-to-back championship trophies. And I'm saying at some point in time, because when you have teams like the Rockets, the Trailblazers, the Jazz, and like you said, these teams that are around 500 that are duking it out for those last two or three spots, yeah, everybody plays Golden State hard, but they're going to play extra hard when they're trying to squeeze their way into a playoff spot. And so no matter, they're going to do those extra things. I'm not going to say they're going to turn into Grayson Allen out here from Duke, but they're going to do those extra things to get into the playoffs. They're going to pull and elbow and you know, do some of the little things that they're going to try to win the games that they might not have done earlier in the season.
Right. Bargy, feel free to jump in whenever you're ready on anything before Gordon gets out of here. Gordon, do you think Houston, by trying to make some of these moves chemistry-wise, getting rid of Marcus Thornton, supposedly they're going to buy out Ty Lawson, do you think they're just trying to fortify everything so Morey can keep his job, one last playoff run, see what they can do? Because, I mean, they're not that far out. Like, as bad as they've been, Houston's two games behind.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall in that locker room, man, especially with, I think it was Pro Basketball Talk that basically put out an article saying James Harden is basically the puppeteer controlling the strings, getting Mikal out, petitioning for Dwight Howard to be traded. You know, and they basically made this guy the scapegoat. So it'd be interesting to see what's going on in that locker room, man, how guys are reacting to and responding to each other right now. Because, while we still watch the games and we still see the images of what was last year and that great push they put together last year, it's a different team now. You know what I'm saying? It's an entirely different dynamic. You take Kevin Mikal away, I mean, Josh Smith has left, has been sent back home. It's an entirely different unit, man. And it'd be interesting to see if everybody's still cool and ready to play ball, or they're just there because it's their job and they're going to do what they do, you know what I'm saying, and looking out for themselves.
Yeah, dude, I maintain that last year was fool's gold. They got to that Western Conference final on kind of like an NCAA tournament run where you just got hot from three, you played a Clipper team that was depleted and didn't have enough guys. They were gassed and they choked, and you came back and won and got to the Western Conference final, and you were clearly overmatched when you got out there with Golden State. But I look at that as one of the more fluky Western Conference Finals appearances we've seen.
But that was the Clippers' fault, man. Oh, what's up, mm-hmm. Gordon, man? Nice to hear from you again, man. That was more the Clippers' fault, too, man. The Clippers, if they would have did what they were supposed to do, I think they the Rockets wouldn't even got a chance.
The GM wanted his son on the team and didn't have any depth on the team. So, I mean, you got to talk to GM about that. Oh, there's Doc.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. It was a good run last year for him. Things have kind of unraveled for him this year. But to touch on the point of what Gordon was saying about the Warriors, man, keep in mind, right now, they don't have the luxury to kind of, you know, to worry about resting guys because the Spurs been nipping at their heels. I think this would probably be a different case if they were probably up maybe 10 games, 8, 9, 10 games where they could, you know, rest right now. But they really don't have the luxury because as good as they've played, the Spurs have been right there. So if it's about getting home court advantage, I mean, they've got to look at that and play as hard as they can. I think if it comes down to it and they're within reach of that record, yeah, I say go for it, man, because those kind of opportunities are only going to come by once in a, you know, once probably in your playing career. And
well,
I say go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree that you do go for it. But at the same time, we're still talking about the Spurs because we all know Pop.
Yeah.
We lost Gordon?
I don't know, man. He's still showing live.
Gordon. Okay. Well, Gordon, if you can call back, definitely call back. And we'll definitely finish out the segment with you because we got to get to your blog and actually talk about that last article that you posted before we get out of here. But either way, man, definitely check out Gordon. He's a good follow on Twitter, at G Robinson Sports. Always willing to talk some sports with you. Gordon, you back?
I tried to bring him back in to see, like, mute him and unmute him, but I don't hear him.
Man, we'll get him back. We'll get him back. And coming up pretty soon, we got the one and only Naughty Dread. You know that's going to get interesting on here. But, yeah, man, that NBA playoff picture, man, it's going to be a really good run down the stretch when we see who gets in and what seed people have. Because there are some teams who are just hoping to have a couple home games to line some owners' pockets. And there are some teams to where if you get them in the first round, they might take you to 6 or 7 and damage you. Like, who wants Detroit? Who wants Portland in the West? You know what I mean? Like, there are certain teams who you just do not want to see. You don't want to play Dallas with an all-timer like Dirk. I didn't think Dallas would be in this position to start the season. But the fact that they have Dirk on their team means you don't want to see them in the playoff series just in case he has a couple of turn-back-the-clock games on you. So it can be dangerous, man. It can be dangerous. But, yeah, we're going to definitely get into more of that. What you got on the board, man? You got another caller?
I got a 317, man. I'm not sure who that is, man. 317.
All right. Let's check out who 317 is. 317.
I just brought him on.
This is Speak It Like You Think It Radio. 317, what's your name? What's going on?
Oh, this is your boy Royce King, man. I was just calling in, listening to the show. I know I had a scheduled call-in time, but I just wanted to hear what everybody else was talking about.
Yeah, indeed. The great R. Keezy. Yeah, definitely, man. We'll definitely keep you on the board because we got to bring you in to close the show. And, man, great basketball mind we're talking to right here, and also official like a ref with a whistle because he wears those stripes. But the great Royce.
No doubt.
We're gonna talk to him tonight. Find him on Twitter at @RoyceKing_. Royce King, always good sports opinions. And you can learn a few things about officiating, about the game, and expand your mind, man. Check Royce out. And you'll hear from him in a little bit. We still waiting on Naughty to come through. But before we get to that, Barzy, I got a little treat. We'll go outside the NBA right now. Barzy, have you watched Conor McGregor's press conferences?
man, have I watched? Man, I've been watching that dude for probably about 2 years now, man. Pretty much.
He's the best trash talker in sports right now, like bar none.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he backs it up too, man. So, I mean, you know, yeah, man, he's an entertainer, man. I've been, checking him out, you know, watching his fights. You know, he surprised me on occasion. But, yeah, for the gift of gab, man, selling the MMA game, selling fights. I mean, there's nobody better right now than him when it comes to that.
And look, I'm not an MMA guy. I'm just getting up to speed on this stuff. But just to check this guy out, like that presser the other day, him and Diaz are up there. And Diaz is talking trash, and he says, "How does it feel to be a millionaire now that you're fighting me? How does it feel?"
Yeah, man.
Like, this dude is good,
like,
man. He tells
like, he don't care about he don't care about weight classes. The only weight class he cares is about his checks, which is super heavyweight. So I mean, the guy is he's been doing this for quite some time, man. I mean, I put a few people on him, like about a year and a half ago. I was like, you know, check out this guy fight, man. This guy, just listening to a talk, man. Just watch a couple of his fights, man. The guy's he's an entertainer, man. I mean, as good as he is, as far as you know, taking the MMA by storm, man. Just for selling the MMA, and from where he's come, from where he started out to where he's overtaken everybody, it's been crazy to see, man. Crazy.
Yeah, he tells the guy who got hurt. He tells him, "I know you're happy to be fighting me. Now you're actually seeing this money. Tell your wife to break out the red panty. Tell her to break out the red panty. You're celebrating. You're fighting me." Like, dude, this boy, Conor McGregor, is a beast on the mic, man. This dude, I got to give it up for him. You got any local Atlanta numbers on the board?
I think 446667, man.
Okay. More than likely.
They on right now,
Nadia
though.
Dredd.
They on, though.
Nadia, are you in the building? No? Still no Nadia? Okay. Still waiting on Nadia. I probably need to send Nadia a text because you know Nadia, man. It's Friday night, man. You might be out, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. And we still got Gordon on. And Gordon at the 404 number. Finish up with Gordon while we're still waiting on Nadia to get in, and we can lay all the other ones out in a timely fashion. But, yeah, definitely bring Gordon in so we can get into that. But, look, man.
He's 404667?
Yeah, that's Gordon, 404.
Yeah, he's in there, man, but they got something funny with his, like a question mark by the number, man. I'm not sure what's
Gordon,
going on.
Oh, Gordon, press 1. Press 1, Gordon. That might be the problem. Like I said, man, y'all got to work with us. This is the first show, man. We're gonna work through the kinks and get this out there smooth. Soon enough. But until then, we still going to hit you with that content. So that's what we're just going to keep banging you with. And another thing, like, look, Barzy, you're going to have to speak to this because I can't speak on this in a truthful manner. I can't be trusted to talk about one Eldridge Woods in a fair fashion. So I think you got to discuss this. This guy being reduced to releasing a swing video to show people that he's still going to come out there and try to compete again. Is this more sad than watching this Kobe Bryant farewell tour?
I don't know if it's more sad because you kind of saw it coming. You could argue you could kind of see it coming for Kobe too, but you know Kobe was still playing pretty well. Just injuries set him back. Kobe looked pretty bad this year, and I think that was the first sign where everybody knew the writing was on the wall for Kobe as far as eventually, you know, exiting stage left. But Tiger Woods, man, he's never really come back to where people had, you know, the expectations that he had basically set for himself. He's never gotten back up to that when he, you know, coming back from the scandal, you know, the setbacks from injuries. He continued to look, you know, worse and worse and just over years, man. So, you know, the swing video, he definitely had to take some time off, man, to try to get himself back healthy so he can at least try to compete. I'm not surprised by the swing video from what was being reported about him. It seemed like this guy couldn't make it from, you know, 15 minutes down the street in a car without, you know, having to be in a fully reclined position, just to make it down the road in a vehicle. So, you know, when that was put out, you figured that this was going to be pretty much, you know, where Tiger Woods would not come back. You know, but it's good to see. I mean, the game. I mean, I'm not a big golf guy. I've watched when he's in contention, man. But, you know, the game needs Tiger Woods, in my opinion. Anybody who says that the golf game is better off without him, I think they need to go back and look at the state of golf prior to him having the success that he did, and post, you know, right now where, you know, the era that we're in with him. You know, everybody's purses increase. You know,
championship rounds of golf,
everything increased. Yep.
Right. He raised the bar and brought the money. And shout out to all you black fake golf fans who only watched when you thought Tiger was about to come back or Tiger was about to win, and when Tiger wasn't playing, you wasn't watching. Shout out to y'all for y'all fake loyalty to the sport. Gordon's on at 404-898. So if you see 898, that's Gordon. Nottie's calling shortly. Then after that, we're going to speak to Chandler Knight, and we still got Royce King still on the docket. So we're still going to be talking to great sports minds as the night goes. But if you don't see Gordon and you see Nottie, oh, go ahead. Joining the call right now on Speak It Like You Think It Radio. Who are we speaking with? Okay. That one didn't work out.
Man, I got a 470 number on him, man.
470? Okay. Let's check out 470. 470, what's on your mind? Speak It Like You Think It Radio. Okay. 470. We'll catch up with you later if you want to call and you want to say something or if you're just listening. Either way, we'll keep it moving within this thing called sports. Barzy, we got the combine going on. So we got a whole lot of old people watching young boys. In a weird way, the combine always kind of gives me a bad feeling watching people checking these young bucks as if they're going in their mouth and looking at their teeth and all of that. But, you know, beyond that, just looking at it as a sports fan, to see some of these times these guys ran and to see some of the lifting and everything going on, this draft may not be quarterback heavy, but it looks like there's a lot of athletes in this draft, man.
Yeah, this is a deep draft as far as, you know, defensive line, and I think there's some good offensive tackle depth as well. So if you talk about in the trenches, there's pretty good depth there. I think today, you know, as the combine gets underway, you're going to start to see some guys basically set themselves apart. But, you know, this right here, man, it all boils down to the tape, man. How did you play? What was your production? You know, obviously some of these guys are going to be great athletes. They're going to grade out well in all these drills. But at the end of the day, man, it's what was your production? Did your production meet the talent? And pretty much if that, you know, if that talent met the production in college, man, you know, these guys, you know, will get drafted where they're supposed to be.
I got you on that. What do you think of the kid from UCLA, Miles Jack? Like, how does that project out in the NFL?
Well, you know, obviously he had the knee thing, and you know, left school to prepare to get in the draft. But that kid's a talent, man. He's a stud, and I think he's gonna go. He can't go no lower than 15, you know, in the top 15, in my opinion. But everything that he's put together on tape for when he's played, I mean, he showed you what kind of player he is, man. So coming off that knee injury, if he doesn't have any off the field flags, that kid's going to go high, man.
And then I guess we got to move on to the SEC, guy who came out with all the fanfare, was bringing, you know, his friends on the team with him. Robert MDJ, of course, bad pronunciation by me, but y'all can live with it. Did he commit what do you call this, a man transgression in telling that Laremy Tunsil was in that hotel room with him when he fell out that window?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what I mean. Obviously, man, I heard about that, and it's crazy for him to put that guy's name in. I don't know how good of a friend he is with Tundle, because he might have cost your boy Tundle a little bit of money by putting his name in there with that whole situation. So, yeah, that's kind of surprising, man. But then again, you know, Kim Dichie is a talent, man. And if he falls, I guarantee you, your team is going to have a pretty big quandary by passing up that type of talent, man, because that dude is a beast.
Oh, it's going to be a fight in that war room. It's going to be a fight in that war room. Somebody's going to make the declarative statement. If you don't get this guy, I'll walk. Like, somebody's going, you know, they're going to pull out all the dramatic stuff that they'll tell, you know, 5 years from now of what happened in that war room that day. Somebody put their foot down and you know, put their career on it. You know what I mean? Like, that's typically what happens when you got high talent with a flag and they might drop.
What's the salary cap, you know, for the rookies now, man? With the salary cap, I mean, I don't think of this as how it used to be in the past before they implemented the rookie cap. It was a bigger free fall if you missed on guys. You know, now, I mean,
right.
You know, a guy like him who has some flags, but the talent is so off, you know, out of the roof. You could more take a chance, man. It's not that detrimental like how it was in the past based on the implementation of the rookie cap.
Agreed. We should have 470 on the line. That should be Naughty Dredd. So if we could bring Naughty on, this is the guy we dealt with. Yeah, 470 is Naughty. We dealt with and built with for years on Speaking Like You Think of Radio. So for the return, you know, we had to bring him back. The Controversial Truth, you can find him at One Man Cave on Twitter, and onemancave.com is his website. The man who asked Josh Smith why he felt comfortable shooting three-pointers to the man's face, not on the podcast, not on Twitter. He asked the man to his face, mic in hand, because that's who he is.
I don't see him, man.
Truth. Naughty Dredd, are you on the call?
I don't see him, man.
Still don't see Naughty?
I don't see a 470 on there.
Well, he called from a different number. So you got another
What's
one
that,
there.
What's that,
205? Yeah, bring him in.
Yeah,
bring him in.
Okay, I'll bring him in. 205.
Yes.
Once again,
up,
the controversial
Hello.
Truth. Join us, Speaking Like You Think
yes.
of Radio. The one and only Naughty Dredd. Naughty,
man.
Good to hear from you. Oh, man, not much, man.
Oh,
we just sitting here shooting the ish, throwing some sports around. I know you wanted to talk about this Golden State thing to where we got, like, old school guys looking at them and saying, oh, I would have locked that guy up. Oh, that team ain't that. What is going on with the old school versus new school right now, man?
Well, I had wanted to touch on it earlier, but I didn't realize that was such a big thing going on in the league. When you hollered at me earlier and you was like, what do you want to talk about? I thought I was wanting to talk about something that a lot of people weren't really talking about, but a lot of people apparently are talking about it. But I will say this, a lot of old guys, and I don't mean ancient old 60, 70, some of them too, but I mean guys around our age, mid-30s, 40, 45, 50. A lot of these guys are giving a lot of the young players collectively, not just stealth, you know, collectively they're giving them a hard time. And I think that's something, and I don't know why, but it's something that has always been that way. I can remember being about 12, 13 years old, and I'm asking my stepfather, I'm like, you know, Joint had just won two straight chips. I said, shoot, is Joint the best player you ever seen? He was like, no, not yet. You know, he up there. He getting up there, you know, but Kareem, you know, Magic, the big O, you know, he was schooling me on these players. He was like, yeah. But when Joint won the third chip in a row, he was like, you know, I'm going to put him up there. He was like, the dude. So it took Joint to win three chips. You know, seven scoring titles, three MVPs before he can get a man his due. So now that I'm up in the mid-30s, I see that a lot with my peers, that they're giving a lot of these guys a hard time, and really these guys are great. You know, the game has changed. The rules are different. You know, they talk about Isaiah Thomas and Oscar Robertson talk about poor perimeter defense. Well, there's not a, it's not man on man anymore. It's a lot of zone. So you got guys playing off guys a lot. So guys are getting good looks, what I would call good looks. So guys are, they'll get the shot where guys are flashing at them. A guy's not in his shirt the whole time. You know, because you're not playing man-on-man ball. And if you do decide to do that and you're going to get up in the shirt, a guy like Steph with the handles he got, he's just going to go by you. And when your man try to come help, he's just going to drop it off to Draymond Green, or he's going to throw it to a wide-open Klay Thompson in the corner. The game has just changed. And in my opinion, it's changed for the better. Because
the free-flowing movement that David Stern wanted, and they basically implemented to where you can't chuck cutters. You can't really hold people when they're trying to run through screens and things like that. That's made it more difficult to guard people one on one. And as you just said, if you're just gonna play Steph one on one, you're just gonna get cut up all night.
Exactly. I mean, the game is just different, man. You know, when Jordan was playing his game in the '80s and the '90s, and it was man to man ball. You know, Jordan was killing. You know, you couldn't guard him one-on-one.
Right.
Shaq even took it to a whole nother level because you couldn't guard Shaq one-on-one. In order to make the game even, you had to implement some type of zone where we can take the ball out of this guy's hand and force these other guys to beat us. That's why nowadays you got to have at least two guys, but you really need three guys who can hoop. Because you're not going to have one guy.
Right, but now let me ask you this since you brought Shaq up. Is Steph Curry that kind of transcendent player what we're watching right now to where we will see a rules change due to people not being able to deal with Steph? Will we see something, whether it's, you know what I mean, more movement on threes where you can touch people a little bit more, or then move the three-point line back eventually? Will we see Steph being a rule changer? Because those are the statue guys. They have to change the rules for you, or a statue guy.
You're right, but all great players haven't caused the rules to get changed. Dominant players caused the rules to get changed. Wilt Chamberlain, Dolph Shays, you know, most of the time it'll be Big Mac, Kareem. Now, these guys caused some rule changes, you know, but Michael Jordan didn't cause a rule to get changed. He changed things off the court as far as marketing. See, this is where Steph, like, you look at the NBA now. I saw a week ago, first time ever, and I didn't know why the hell the NBA was doing it. I thought it was a waste of money and resources. But they decided that for every three-point shot that got shot up on that telecast, the three-point line was going to light up. That's something because guys are checking threes. No need. I can see the three-point line. No need to light the line up every time somebody take a three to let me know it was a three or not. You know what I'm saying? But that's how the game is evolving and what these players or somebody like Steph can bring as far as the change. But I don't see him being able to change the rule mostly because of his size. Like, he just killing right now. You just got to deal with it.
What kind of rule would you change with a guy shooting three-pointers damn near from half court? What kind of rule would you put to try and stop that?
There's only a few things you can do. But go ahead, Matt.
I don't think I would implement is maybe moving the line back or creating a 4-point shot, you know, something like that, you know. But once again, Steph is the only guy doing this. It ain't a plethora of guys out here doing it for where I need to change the rule. It's just Steph. It's him.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I would say the opposite. If you really wanted to kill it, like to stop him, the rule change, take away the 3-point line. That would be my thing. You know, make that shot.
Or limit the amount of attempts a team can take in a game. Like, you know, some of these teams are shooting 33s in a game, man, 43.
Yeah.
No, if they said, okay, you can only shoot 23. Exactly, I agree. I'm just saying that we were hypothetically going to just throw something in there, you know, to try to take away from what he's doing right now. There's nothing really you can do but, you know, suffer You know, the man put in the work. And when you put in hard work, it should be rewarded. You know, you got guys like Isaiah Thomas who are worried about if Steph wins this chip this year with another MVP, then he passed you up. You are out the talk. We're not talking about Isaiah Thomas no more. Steph can pass you up.
Yeah.
It's a route. You should have got more chips. You should have won 3 chips. You should have won 4. You got 2. You left when a little bit early, maybe. I mean, it's a route. The man came, and you getting passed up. It's over. You know what I'm saying? Magic ain't getting passed up because Steph will have to win 5. And if he win 5 or 6, then get him in here, dude. He one of the greatest ever.
Yeah. By the time he's done, I made this statement. A lot of people disagree with it, but now I want to see if you agree and Barge as well. Do you think by the time he wraps it up, he will be considered the greatest shooter that ever lived?
He might be already. He might be already. I mean, you look at obviously he shoots a lot of threes, but you look at all the shooting records that he's already racking up. There's a case to say right.
You got guys who did that for 7 to 10 years. So, I mean, does he have to do it for an extended period before we give it to him?
No, because he's owning the records for some of those guys who played 7, 10 years. He's besting them already in 2 or 3. So it might be a case to be made now that, yes, he right now is the best shooter that ever played. I mean, you could make that argument right now. You could make that argument right now.
I would say – I won't. I do not disagree with anything Barnes just said, but I will say this: when we're talking about the best, I think there are always going to be some guys who are going to be arguable, and I think Steph has already put his name in that category. Like, if somebody says Steph Curry is the best shooter of all time, that's arguable, you know, based on the numbers and you know the what he's accomplished. But also, you know, Chris Jackson, one of the best shooters I ever seen. You know, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, he's one of the best shooters I ever seen. You got Mark Price. You got Chris Mullin. You got Larry Bird, who put up volume shots and won chips. You know, I can't – and the way he won a three-point contest, I mean, he won 3 times in a row, winning that Tottenham before he was going to win, kept it warm up on. Walked off with the thing in the air. I mean, those things, 3-point contest, I mean, but when you really put it, if somebody wanted to argue Bird over him, that would be the argument. What about the 3-point contest? That's why the 3-point contest this year was big. You know, it was like, can Curry do this? Because he's trying to become, hands down, the greatest shooter ever. You know, and there's going to be things that can be argued. So I would say he's arguably the greatest shooter ever, but I mean, there are other guys who can be named in that category, too. And I could say, okay, you know, they arguable, too.
Right, right. Well, Nadi, can you put people on to what you're doing over at One Man Cave? Because we got to bring the next guy in. But what you're doing over at onemancave.com, you've been a sports guy for years, radio. You worked with the Two Live Stews as an engineer, producer. You've written your own stuff and on your blog. You've done this. You've interviewed in the locker room, as I brought up your Josh Smith moment. What are you doing over at onemancave.com?
Man, I'm doing some of all that, man. You know, just really getting the controversial truth, getting that back up and reloaded, ready to put some of the old episodes out again. And, you know, doing a lot of stuff with the Hawks. You know, got the Hawks page on the website. Also, I've been doing a lot with photography lately, man. So, you know, I do a lot of photo shoots off of Morgan Drive in the Atrium parking lot. I got a studio spot in there. You can come check me out. So we do a lot of photography, video editing, you know. So just dipping and dabbing in a lot of different things, man, with the website just to keep it, you know, keep it rolling and keep it pushing up. You know, it's progressing, and, you know, that's always a positive thing.
Well, I say this with a raised eyebrow, Nadi, but within that photography, is there also urban models?
Oh, you know, there are always urban models. You know, a lot of times it depends on, you know, what events I'm at, you know. you know, there's always going to be urban models, you know. They're the best kind, you know, if you ask me. So, you check out the website. You go to the eShots page. It's called eShots. You'll see a lot of photos, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, different events, different things like that. So, you know, hopefully, you know, you see something that you like. But, you know, it's not all that. You know, it's some, you know, classy shots and things like that. We do fashion shows. I've done fashion shows. I've done movie premieres and things of that nature. So, you know.
Right. Once again, though, go to at One Man Cave on Twitter and go to onemancave.com to check out Naughty. Naughty, we'll talk to you soon. And if you got time, definitely join us on the wrap-up when we bring everybody in to close the show.
All right, man. Just along, man, and I'll make sure that happens.
For sure, for sure. Barzy, on the board should be 347. If you got a 347, bring him in.
347, you on?
347. We're talking about the great Chandler Knight. You can find him at KnightChandler7 on Twitter. This is another controversial guy, opinionated guy, but always well thought out opinions, which is why I respect him. Chandler, thanks for calling into the show, my dude.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Indeed. Now, Chandler hit me earlier. Oh, go ahead.
I was heckling y'all in the chat room, but y'all wasn't paying me no attention, so.
Oh, my bad, man.
Hey, man, we got to crawl first. We got to crawl first. We'll get there. We can get to the chat room banter. But Taylor hit me earlier. He said he wanted to talk baseball. Y'all know me as far as baseball. I'm still the guy who has to be convinced. And now that I got two baseball guys going, and Barzy and Chandler, maybe that can happen. But Barzy, anything baseball-wise you want to talk to Chandler about that you find interesting? Because I want to lean this over to you two guys, because I respect you guys' opinion on that beautiful game of baseball that I haven't been interested in my whole life.
I've been hearing some about about the proposed rule changes or things that they want to implement. What's your thoughts on some of the things being discussed about, you know, either improving the shortening the length of the games or improving the game, especially from a player safety standpoint, the second base, kind of discussion that, you know, has been bandied about. Just your thoughts on that, man.
Well, the pace of the game thing has always pissed me off, because the people who complain about that the most are the people who don't have to pay to get in to watch a game. For a family of four to go to a baseball game, not a playoff game, just say an average midsummer game, you're looking at spending close to a mortgage payment. You're looking at about $800. Okay? You're looking at easily $800 spent. That's a mortgage payment. So if I spend $800 to go to a game, I want that game to last forever, okay? Forever. That's a mortgage payment, man.
Yeah.
You got all these broadcasts, oh, the game is, we need to speed it up. Dude, you're not paying to get in. You're getting free food. A hot dog is $12 in some stadiums. You take your kids to the game, you got to buy them a hot dog, you got to buy them the $8 soda, you got to buy them the $6 cotton candy. Okay, you got to get them a baseball, Herb. You got to get them a baseball, okay? That's $15. They want a hat with the ice cream. That's another $12. Are you kidding me? They go, we got to speed it up. No. I want that game to last all night, man. That might be the only game I'll go to all year. I just laid out $800. Y'all better play till the sun come up.
What about the argument that's made as far as compared to the other sports, as far as bringing in new eyes to the game and that aspect of it, that the game is so drawn out, it's hard to for the novice fan to come on and latch on to baseball, and that's why they're losing so many viewers and over time they're not bringing in that new fan base and generating, more eyes in baseball. They're more like the old heads, like you and I, who probably grew up watching baseball, who are loyal to the game, but they're not growing the game because of things like this and the game being too long and that aspect of it.
That's a lie, because baseball viewership has been trending upwards for the past 5 years. Baseball had their highest ratings last season, and that's before the playoffs. Their TV contract money is going up. If you don't have viewers, your TV contract money goes down. The TV contract money keeps going up. So that's a bald-faced lie. That's just something they're saying so they can justify these changes. Now, listen, part of the love of what draws my into baseball is the passing down of the history of the game. You're sitting at the game and you get to talk to your kid, or you go there with an older person. Some people go there with their fathers, their mothers, whoever. You know, when I was living at home as a kid, my mother, and I'm watching Yankee games, one of the things about it and how I got my mother into baseball was I was sitting there explaining the game to her. And we're talking about the game while we're watching. Well, why are they doing this? Oh, this is why they do this. Because, see, there was this guy, you know, Dizzy Dean, and he used to do this. And then in 1968, they had to lower the mound because Bob Gibson had this ERA. What's the ERA? And all of that builds the love of the game. So that time that there is in baseball, that time is supposed to be used to talk about the game, and that's how you pass down the love of the game. But that's not being done because everybody wants a microwave society. So that is what it is. I don't agree with it, but they're doing it. The 30-second thing on the managers going to the mound, I can understand it because there's far too many conversations going on, far too many pitcher-catcher conversations. Dude, I put down the fingers, you throw what I tell you to throw. We have one conversation after that. Listen, pick a pitch and throw it. There shouldn't be 17 trips to the mound for one batter. You only have three pitches. What are we talking about here? What do you want to throw? I want to throw a curve. Okay, I'll go back. What do you want to throw? I still want to throw a curve. Then why didn't you throw the curve? You see what I'm saying? So that I can understand. The neighborhood play that they got rid of is going to get more players hurt than it's going to save. I'm sorry that Chase Utley broke my man's leg. I forget whose leg he broke. I'm sorry he broke his leg. But that was a clean slide to me. Taha, yeah. I'm sorry he got his leg broke. Here's the thought. If you had done it correctly and used the base like you're supposed to, then you wouldn't have gotten your leg broke. Because you're supposed to come across the bag, not go alongside the bag. He got his leg broken because he ran the double play incorrectly. How about you teach the player to run the double play correctly, then you don't have to worry about people getting hurt. By taking away the neighborhood play and making the second, you make the second baseman a stationary target now. Anybody that knows anything about baseball knows now I can barrel roll across the bag now. I don't have to stretch my body out, which means I can bring more force to you, and your leg is now planted on the base.
Man, Cold-hearted, no love for the man with the broken leg. Well, let me ask you two guys a question, and just take it wherever you want to take it as far as how it goes with baseball. But who do you see as really prime for possibly getting that trophy, and who do you see as your sleeper coming into the season without seeing anything, not a ball thrown, not a bat swung early on? Who's your contender that you think is going to do it, and who's your sleeper?
Who do you want to go first?
Go ahead, man.
Go ahead.
I think the Boston Red Sox are far more dangerous than people think. I got Kung Fu Panda's comeback player of the year. He plays better when he's fat. I don't think the Kansas City Royals make it to the World Series again. Now, this the pick from my heart is Yankees because I'm a Yankee fan. The pick from my head, I got the Red Sox coming out of the American League. And I hate the Red Sox, and I hate to say that, but I do. Out of the National League, I think the Nationals finally make it this year. I like Dusty Baker as a manager. I think he could manage that pitcher staff. But my dark horse is the Arizona Diamondbacks because I like what they've done. They got more than Greinke. The kid Segura that people don't know about because he played in Milwaukee, that kid is going to be a monster for the next 10 years. He's going to be – people are going to talk about him as potentially the best player in baseball. He is that good. So I got the Diamondbacks as my dark horse.
And boy,
I like your Red Sox pick, man. I'm a Red Sox fan, man. But that's a good pick, man. Sleeper team, I'm going to say the Indians, man. I like their pitching. Salazar, Kluber, you know, they got some good young pitching. Carrasco there. You know, I think to really make headway in the major leagues, you got to have some, you know, good young power arms, you know, starting pitchers on your roster, and some good young players, some good players.
Mm-hmm. Are we getting cut?
Yeah, man.
Did we go the whole time?
Sorry about that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so you got the Indians as your sleeper. Who you got as your team you would put money down on?
I'm gonna ride with my man on the Red Sox, man, just because I like to you know to see that happen. And the team that I probably would say, you know, you probably might want to look at that maybe can make some moves is I think the Toronto Blue Jays, man. You know, they're loaded for bear. They're still trying to, you know, to do things, you know, to make moves. I heard they're trying to pick up Jay Bruce, but, you know, that team, depending on what their starting pitching looks like, you know, or develops over the course of the season, they're loaded to slug with people, so. You know, I'd say look out for them too. And the East is always going to be tough. So if the Red Sox do make it out of there, yeah, they can make it all the way. As far as the National League, I'm going to roll with the Cubs and the Nationals as the favorite. And I'd say the look out for the Dodgers as well, man. Have a bounce back year, make some noise.
Okay. Interesting picks going on. All you MLB fans, definitely check these guys out and definitely check out their picks for later on in the season to see how they weigh out. Chandler, thank you for calling in. We're going to go to the free-for-all in a minute and bring everybody in. But I got to say, you can find Chandler on Sports City Chefs on blogtalkradio.com. Always giving his opinion there. And if you want to connect with him on Twitter, and trade barbs and you know, throw your sports thoughts at them. It's at Knight, KNIGHT, Chandler, CHANDLER, 7. So definitely check him out on Sports City Chefs, on Blog Talk Radio, and also find him on Twitter at ChandlerKnight7. But Chandler, thanks for the call, man. I really appreciate the time and the energy and the baseball wisdom, my dude. Salute.
All right, thanks for having me, bud.
Indeed. All right, indeed. Yeah, man. So now we're going to close the show out. So we got to bring in the great Royce King to do that. Royce King is a basketball expert. He'll make you kind of rethink some of the things you said about basketball or what you're thinking about a team or a player or whatever you want to say. But if you could bring Royce back in, the same guy from earlier, Royce is going to close us out on this show tonight. Royce King, are you still there, sir?
I'm still here, gentlemen.
I know you had a game tonight.
Thanks for having me on.
There we go. You can find Royce on Sports City Chefs as well, on Blog Talk Radio, hosted by TP Timeless. And you can find him on Twitter at TP, TYMELESS. So definitely connect with him. Royce is an official plus a basketball expert. He's out there getting some of that official money tonight. Royce, basketball-wise, man, tell me where you want to go first, and then I'll take it back to the doctor. But where you want to go first NBA-wise, my man?
I mean, I'm really open to wherever you want to go, man. I've been in transit, you know, mobile, you know, getting from the game to home. So, I'm open, man. I've just been listening to what's going on. Let's make it do what it do.
Indeed. So, Royce, me and you have talked a lot on Sports City Chefs about the playoffs and what we see the playoff picture equaling out to. With this move of Joe Johnson going to Miami, after we made all those great picks and argued for 30 minutes last night about it, what are your feelings on him going to Miami?
Well, I definitely want to remind you, I picked Miami as, like, the spot that would be good for him in the Eastern Conference as well as good for the team and the development of a player. One thing that strikes me, you know, kind of funny about Joe Johnson is he just doesn't seem to be the type of guy who's built for chasing a championship ring. And I know a lot of people are like, you know, it just doesn't make sense. Why is he going to Miami? If he wants to win a ring, he should go to Cleveland, or he should go maybe to the Clippers, or maybe go to San Antonio, somebody who has a chance. But that's just not who Joe Johnson is, and it's not hard to tell. All you got to do is look at where he went when he left Phoenix, when he had a choice, when he had an option for free agency to pick and choose. He chose, no shade, fellas, the Atlanta Hawks. Okay? It's not like the Atlanta Hawks was a powerhouse. I didn't mean to slap you guys around in your own kitchen, but, I mean, I just got to state the facts. He chose the Atlanta Hawks. So, you know, Joe Johnson picking the Miami Heat, to me, it's a great move for the Miami Heat. I think it helps Joe Johnson, and it just speaks to the type of person he wants to be remembered for. One, he's a smart businessman. He's already got his money, right? I want to say Joe Johnson probably made upwards of $200 million. So the dollar is irrelevant. The winning a ring, obviously, that doesn't matter to him. It's not going to make or break his career. It's not a guy that's in conversations for one of the all-time greats at his position or anything like that, whether it's three-point shooting, being clutch, nothing, none of that matters to Joe. So when you have Joe Johnson in Miami with a young talent like Justice Winslow, he is the primary beneficiary of Joe Johnson signing in Miami. That's why Pat Riley made sure he contacted Joe Johnson, and as you guys stated earlier, he laid it on heavy, man. He said what needed to be said. He didn't even have to break out the championship rings, okay? It was just about having a championship conversation and making Joe feel comfortable in his own skin so he could be the guy that he's always been. He could come in to have opportunities to pound the ball, go ISO Joe, hit game winners, and at the same time, just blend in and be one of the guys. When you have Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade, Luol Deng, Joe Johnson, Gerald Green, Justice Winslow, Hassan Whiteside, you have a team. It could be any guy on any given night. And I'm leaving Chris Bosh out just because we don't know whether or not he's going to play. But if you add Bosh to the mix, you're talking about a very good team. But more importantly, again, I stress, you have a young talent in Justice Winslow who can learn a lot from a guy like Joe Johnson along with Dwayne Wade, and his future looks even brighter now because everything he learns from those guys, he's going to do it from the left because he's a left-handed player. And we all know, first thing you teach a kid in sports, make him go left. Why are you going to let Justice Winslow go left? You understand what I'm saying? He's going to go to his dominant hand. Because you are your habits, and that's your basic habit is to make a guy go left, and Justice Winslow eventually become a more dominant player, I think, going forward, just because the Miami Heat had the foresight to bring in a guy like Joe Johnson and help his development along.
Yeah, the Heat stole Justice Winslow at number 10, and we're going to see how he develops out there, and I think we'll see some really good things from that dude going forward. Royce, I got another just – strategy question for you as far as the NBA. Within the next couple of years, as everybody drives themselves crazy trying to figure out how to deal with Golden State, will we see a team use a zone as their primary defense and get so good at it that we talk about that team's zone as, you know, like a vaunted thing, like somebody pulls out a really good 1-3-1 or a 3-2 in a figure out a way to deal with Steph and those boys? Like, do you see a zone coming to the forefront and somebody being looked at as Tibbs of zone defense in the NBA when they come up with a great concept or a great execution of it?
Man, I wish you could see my face right now. I got a big Kool-Aid smile. Absolutely not. Hell no. It's not going to work. First thing first, we all know you shoot somebody out of a zone, you're going to ask a guy – or a bunch of guys who are already long-range snipers and marksmen to shoot a team out of a zone, easy pickings, easy pickings. That's an absolute mistake to run a zone against Golden State and those guys. I wouldn't even, you know, box and want it, none of that. I mean, bottom line, with the Golden State Warriors, that's the type of team where you have to get better. I think coaches on the sideline need to, you know, modify and adjust the way they approach the game offensively and defensively. A lot of times what you hear is defense wins championships. I get that. But at the end of the day, the team that scores the most points wins the game. So with that being said, you have to meet the Golden State Warriors on their level, on their playing ground. Number one, this is a very good defensive team. Let's not forget that. I think so many times people are caught up and enamored with the shot-making ability of guys like Steph and Clay, Draymond Green, Harrison Barnes, or whoever, and they don't realize this team plays outstanding defense and they get tons of shots in the painted area, layups, dunks, backdoor cuts. I'm like, look, man, the three-point shot is just a cherry on top. It's icing on the cake. It's overblown. It's the end thing. It's vogue. It's what's hot right now. But this is a complete team. So going forward, if you're going to compete with them, you have to be able to do the same thing at that level. You're not going to find another Steph Curry. Forget about it. So you just can't think, I got to be able to match these guys with threes. No, you have to get points in the paint. You have to make the timely threes you're going to take. And most importantly, you have to be able to get stops. That's the thing. No one's really getting stops. And I'd like to say that also it'd be important, I think, matchup-wise, you got to go heavy at Steph Curry because he's not a great defender. His best defense is his offense. He's one of those guys. He's a throwback. You know, there are times where there are plenty of guys in the history of the league who really couldn't defend anybody, but their offense was their defense. That's Steph Curry. That's why he's taking shots where you'd be like, man, is that worth four or five out there? Because that was really deep. Why is he taking the shot out so deep? Because he has a quick release, and his shot is not the prettiest shot. You wouldn't teach a child to shoot the ball like Steph Curry, but you want him to make it like Steph Curry. You know what I'm saying? So when you guys were talking earlier about the greatest shooter.
His shot is clearly made by a guy who was really light early on in life and had to kind of throw it. And as he got stronger, he kind of kept the same muscle memory. So, yeah, that's the weird thing about Steph's shot is you would expect it to be this beautiful Ray Allen type of shot, but it's actually not. That's a great point raised by you because I don't think a lot of people recognize that. Now, look, I could throw these things at Royce all night because I'm always trying to figure out something we could throw at Golden State. But, Barnsley, please, any NBA questions you got for Royce, go ahead. Or, you know, I'm going to go right to my next Golden State haterism of idea of trying to slow them down.
I was going to say the most underrated thing about Golden State or one of their best attributes is the versatility, man. They can have so many ball players and so many guys who can switch up and guard different multiple positions on the court at the same time, man. And I think that's really underrated. It's hard for teams to combat that, whether it be offensively or on the defensive end, because they have so many guys. And even in the pick-and-roll situations, man, you know, the switches – The players are so similar, you know. It's really not a detriment, as opposed to you've got bigger guys out there who can't stay with the quicker guys, and it just poses all kind of matchup problems. So it's one of the how their roster is built, the versatility of those guys. It's to me that's one of their best attributes that make them such a strong team, man, and such a difficult team to really combat anything against. They just pose all kind of difficult matchups. Now, obviously, Curry stretching the court, you know, is a big thing. But even if you try to take away Steph Curry, my man Thompson could light you up for 35-40. You know, it's not people who say like stop Steph. Well, yeah, I've seen Steph score 20 points and not have a good game, and they still won. You know what I mean? I think their defense has slipped a little bit this year, though, just a tad. I think they need to get back in fine tuning that. Maybe that's a little bit of Steve Kerr not being present the whole year, but to me, that's their little Achilles heel, man. I think they're. Their defense is not quite as good as it was last year, in my opinion.
I give you that. I buy that a little bit. but I like your point about how versatile the roster is and the lineup. And let's look at it. When we talk about basketball players or the types of basketball players, they have it all. They have shooters. They have drivers, slashers, mid-range shooters. They have a guy that you can dump it down to in the post. He doesn't have to be dominant for a long stretch like Shaquille O'Neal or anything like that, but they have people that you can dump it down to. They have smarts. They have quickness. They have shooters. They have shooters. They have shooters. They got playmakers. They got shooters. They got playmakers. They got shooters. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's just an unending plethora of
guys,
of
that can
guys
play
who
positions.
Create.
Yeah. No, go ahead, Royce, my bad. I was just saying
they create for themselves, they create for the team, they share for with their teammates. And let's think about the size. Everybody talks about small ball, and here's how I look at what Steve Kerr did. He went outside the box. He took something that has always been done in basketball, and it's not really rocket science. He didn't invent something that's completely brand new. Remember the 6'2 and under leagues that we used to play in? I mean, yeah. I'm not over 6'2". So I've been in 6'2 under league, okay? So what you do is, you know, in the 6'2 and under league, you got guys at 6'2 that could post very well. They got footwork.
Right.
They got moves. They got drop steps. They got jump hooks. They got, you know, fadeaways, dream shakes. They got all of that. So all they did was turn it up a notch. And let's make sure we got a roster of 6'6", 6'7", across the board. Steph Curry the exception, all right? Klay Thompson, 6'7". Iguodala, like 6'8", 6'9". Harrison Barnes, 6'8", 6'9". Sean Livingston was a 6'7 point guard drafted straight out of high school. People don't even know this boy had real
where
game.
Where was he drafted from?
See, here you go with the Peoria, Illinois. All right, man, look. I get it. That's your boy. He did his thing. Number 4 pick overall to the Clippers straight out of high school. He had a lot of promise. Unfortunately, he had that horrific injury, but the beauty of his career, he's back and he's contributing. Why? Because he's always been basketball savvy, basketball smart, and his height has always been an advantage. He's a mid-range assassin. I mean, like, this team is just deep with guys who can play basketball, okay? They're not running around playing at basketball. They actually know how to play basketball. That's what these other teams don't have in totality. When you talk about from the first man all the way to the 15th man, that's it. And then you got to think outside the box. Everybody else is trying to copycat. All he did was take something that's been going on forever and in a day. He brought it to the NBA and said, hey, let's unleash it. Let's do it. They bought in, and they had the type of personnel that could deliver.
And I would say Jeff Hornacek, who was recently fired, is the guy who really brought on that small ball major minutes idea. It ended up, you know, not working out in the end because that franchise didn't support him. But everybody else started looking at it as, well, wait a minute. I don't have to just run small ball at the end of the game. I can do this for major minutes during the game and get a good stretch, a good run, you know, a nice 10-2 run that'll change the face of the game. And now teams are looking at it like, look, we can do this heavy minutes. So, yeah, man. But if you remember, though,
that Golden State Don Nelson team that that beat that Dallas team, they implemented that small ball a lot. That where they played Steven Jackson, you had a guys with a similar size, a bunch of shooters. They had that there going for a while, but I think
his whole career, but they never went far. So everybody looked at it as a novelty, like every once in a while you can
because
do this.
Because those teams didn't
but
play
to look
defense.
At it as, I'm going to do this majorly, like that's a huge step in the NBA. Yeah, Don Nelson was never about that defense, we will say that. But Royce, man, thank you for the call. I think you really gave some people some insight about this Golden State situation. I think Western Conference assistant coaches are drinking way more than they've drank in the last 10 years and trying to come up with something to deal with this team. But you can find Royce King on Twitter at @RoyceKing_. And you can also find him on Sports City Chefs, blogtalkradio.com. Definitely check him out. Always with good insight and basketball wisdom. The man's an official, man. He had a game tonight. Royce, were the young boys trying to test the official tonight? Did you have to give them that eye?
Absolutely not. Everybody was on their best behavior, man, and it ended up being a blowout, so it was all about game management.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. This is Speaking Like You Think of Radio. We're going to shut it down as far as the interview portion, and now we're going to bring everybody back in. Guys who've been on, definitely press 1 and get back in, and we're going to have everybody jump on this call now, and we're just going to keep it moving sports-wise until they shut us down. That's kind of how we roll. You give us an inch, we'll take, you know. You know how the game goes. So definitely, Barzy, open up all the lines. Who's ever on, we definitely want to hear from you. And like I said, this is Speaking Like You Think of Radio, first show. Just getting used to the new terrain, trying to figure out how we're going to come across on this. But no matter what, you're going to get real sports talk, none of that watered down, hot take, silly nonsense. We want to hear from people who got a real validated opinion. So that's what we do. And while we're waiting on everybody to come in, Barzy, I've been fighting with people all season about Kirk Cousins. It looks like the R's front office is looking at Kirk Cousins the same way I am. That was nice. You played very well against some bad teams. You showed some potential. But here's this franchise tag, because we're not about to give you $120 million right now. Your thoughts on Kirk Cousins as we switch to another sport, back to the NFL?
Yeah, man, it's pretty much like you said it is, man. I don't blame him. It's got to be a prove-it-to-me league. I mean, he came on strong. He had a pretty decent season, man. But, these things, you know, have to play out over time. He's going to, you know, once the book is out there on you, or they have some kind of a way to combat what you're doing, let's see how you react to that. Let's see if you can continue to progress and evolve and still be the player that they expect you to be. And one season, there's been guys who had one great season and really not turning around. Look, we're talking about Kaepernick now, RG3, guys who've had good season in the NFL before and falling off the map. So, yeah, I don't blame the Redskins on being cautious at all and trying to be, prudent in their spending on how much they give a guy off of one a good season, not a great season, but a pretty good season, you know. So definitely I'm with them on that, man. That's something where you didn't see them doing before. So it's definitely good to see them trying to, exercise some caution in where it comes to spending and just giving out, exorbitant contracts.
And that's the difficult part about the NFL. Uh-oh. We just got the lady saying 90 seconds. So the free-for-all that I promised may not come into fruition. We'll try to call back and see if we can start up another one with the remaining time that we have. If that doesn't work, either way, man, thank all of y'all for coming in and putting in the time on the show. Speaking Like You Think at Radio, we will be back. Shout out to @Knight Chandler, @KNIGHT Chandler 7. Shout out to onemancave.com and Naughty Dread. That's @onemancave.com. Shout out to @GRobinsonSports. That's 929thegame.com/CBS Atlanta. Find his blog. Shout out to @RoyceKing, R-O-Y-C-E-K-I-N-G. And, of course, shout out to the co-host who ran the board and made it happen, the great Craig Barzy. You can find him @Barzy, B-A-R-Z-E-Y, underscore B-A-R-Z-E-Y. I'm Naj. You can definitely find me on Speak It Sports on Twitter. We'll be back to do this much better with the same guests and a few extra surprises. But thank y'all for listening, and thank everybody for calling and contributing. Much respect. And we are up out of here. 10 seconds to go. The Blog Talk lady has shut it down. The fat lady is singing. Thank y'all. We'll be back better, more opinionated, and check out sportscitychef.com as well. We out.